अयावृत्याभास्राद्भीक्षितिमण्डलम् तीर्थानि क्षेत्रमुख्यानि सेवितान्था भूतले.
Of the earth, how did you maintain your livelihood? At which holy places and pilgrimage sites did you render service? Purport by His Divine Grace. Vidura went out from the palace to detach himself from household affairs, especially political intrigues. As referred to here and before, he was practically insulted by Duryodhana's calling him a son of a Shudrani, although it was not out of place to talk loosely in the case of one's grandmother. Vidura's mother, although a Shudrani, was the grandmother of Duryodhana, and funny talks are sometimes allowed between grandmother and grandchildren. But because the remark was an actual fact, it was unpalatable talk to Vidura, and it was accepted as a direct insult. He therefore decided to quit his paternal house and prepare for the renounced order of life. This preparatory stage is called Vanaprastha Ashram, or retired life, for traveling and visiting the holy places on the surface of the earth. In the holy places of India, like Vrindavan, Haridwar, Jagannath Puri and Prayag, there are many great devotees, and there are still free kitchen houses for persons who desire to advance spiritually. Maharaj Yudhisthira was inquisitive to learn whether Vidura maintained himself by the mercy of the free kitchen houses.
Narration from Srimad Bhagavatam. Vidura is returning to the palace of Hastinapura. Vidura was a real well-wisher of all living beings. He exemplified Krishna's most blessed teachings of Bhagavad Gita. He had no friends, he had no enemies. He saw everyone as the part and parcel of Krishna, and therefore, in a most selfless mood of devotion, he was everyone's well-wisher. Even though he was so terribly abused in his instructions to Dhritarashtra, nevertheless, he never gave up on him. At the risk of his very life, he tried to help him, and simultaneously, he was always trying to help the Pandavas who were the worst enemies of Dhritarashtra. This transcendental position of neutrality is something very rare. It can only be executed by someone who has no material desires and no false ego at all. On one hand, there was the Pandavas. Dhritarashtra was trying to murder them, cheat them, exploit them. And it was Vidura, more than anyone, who was always sending messages to the Pandavas with such love and affection for their welfare. Krishna used him to save the Pandavas' lives through his well wishes again and again. At the same time, he was such a loving well-wisher of Dhritarashtra. But such loving reciprocation, which he offered, was based on real knowledge. He was a true friend. In this material world, friendship is we compromise the principles of truth simply to keep some close relationship. But Vidura, he loved Dhritarashtra, and therefore, even though his words were utterly unpalatable to Dhritarashtra, nevertheless, he spoke the truth because he knew that it was for the real self-interest. He understood that Dhritarashtra would be destroyed if he did not live according to the principles of Dharma. So these days, we have so many sentimental relationships with family members. But what is love? The love for a parent to a child is you give that child such an example and such good teachings that that child surrenders to Krishna. Other than that, material sentiments in the form of love are really not beneficial at all for your object of so-called love. And therefore, we cannot really consider it love at all. Similarly, amongst friends, within our society, we make so many friends in the college, in our offices, so many places. We make friends amongst various relatives. But a real friend is someone who wants to help the other. Just sentimental gestures to keep each other happy or close together for our own personal enjoyments is not friendship at all. Real friendship is service, based on service. And real service is to help a person in what they need most. And in this material world, where everybody is revolving endlessly in the cycle of birth and death, the dire need is Krishna consciousness, proper instructions of how to live in Krishna's service. How to live according to the real nature of our soul, how to live according to the pure moral principles of Yukta Vairagya. So Vidura, although he knew that Duryodhana was always trying to exploit Dhritarashtra due to his terrible association, Vidura was even the well-wishing friend of Duryodhana. He would also instruct him. He would speak the truth, however unpalatably it was to him. But everyone has their independence. Dhritarashtra and Duryodhana were so blinded by their material attachments, they could not recognize their greatest well-wishing, loving friend. And as Srila Prabhupada explains here, Duryodhana insulted Vidura with such terrible words. Duryodhana was not an ordinary man. He was a great prince, a king. He was actually, he was born of a very special and high birth. And he was most powerful, most learned, most expert at everything. He was so sharp in his intelligence that even though he was such a demoniac person in his behavior toward the Pandavas, he was able to convince by his words and by his influence most of the armies of the world to take his side and fight against Krishna and the Pandavas. There were so many great, great armies and kings that filled this planet, and each one had the choice during the battle of Kurukshetra to be on the side of Krishna or Duryodhana. Duryodhana was so sly. He was such an expert person at talking and behaving with diplomacy that he actually 11 phalanxes, 11 Akshohini divisions, he convinced to take his side. The Pandavas only were able to canvass 7. So we have some understanding of the potency of this person. Of course, Krishna explains that all intelligence, all power is coming from him. And Krishna empowered Duryodhana in such wonderful, incredible ways, but Duryodhana utterly misused it all. He took the power of Krishna, and at one time he actually used all that power to try to arrest Krishna and put him in prison. This is how material attachment can completely blind a person's proper vision. And it is said that knowledge, material abilities give one power, and power that is misused is very, very deadly and dangerous to the people in general. And we see great kings like Yudhisthira, like Parikshit. They had so much power, so much intelligence, and because they used it in Krishna's service, according to Krishna's will, with humility, they did the greatest benefit for all the world. And Duryodhana, he had the same power, the same intelligence, coming from the same source, but because he utilized it for his own selfish purposes, not with humility, but with ego, false ego, he simply created disturbance. Nothing but disturbance and his own destruction. So when Duryodhana insulted Vidura, we cannot even imagine what type of words came out of his mouth. The words are given in Srimad Bhagavatam. He called him the son of a Shudrani. And it wasn't so much what he said, but the way he said it. He had such power of envy. He was actually empowered by Maya with unbelievable envy. And when he spoke, it was like flaming shafted arrows in the heart of Vidura. Krishna says in Gita that for a devotee, honor and dishonor are the same. For them, the things that are so attractive in this world, such as honor, material pleasures, opulences, they are like dirt. They have no value. So why Vidura reacted in such a way? Because Vidura understood that Duryodhana's words and Dhritarashtra's allegiance to Duryodhana's envy would be the cause of terrible, terrible destruction. And therefore, he took the opportunity to leave that place. And he went throughout India to various holy places of pilgrimage. And ultimately, he met with Maitreya Muni, and he humbly and submissively inquired from him into the nature of Krishna consciousness. Meanwhile, the war was fought. Duryodhana and all of his 99 brothers were slain by Bhima in a most terrible way. Dhritarashtra, although he was blind by Sanjaya's narration, he was able to see everything that was going on. He was personally witnessing the death of all of his children, of all of his well-wishers. And after that war, he had such shameless state of mind that the very people that he tried to murder and insult, Yudhisthira, he accepted residence within their house. And Yudhisthira, being of the same mood as Vidura, simply had no enemies. He was just kind to everyone. And he, with such great respect, he was taking care of Dhritarashtra, treating him like a superior in every way. So Vidura is here in this chapter, returning to the palace only for one reason: to somehow or other give Dhritarashtra the chance to perfect his life. Despite all insults, despite being kicked out of his own home by the influence of Dhritarashtra. So here we find, as Vidura is returning, Yudhisthira Maharaj and his brothers, when they heard that this great devotee, Vidura, was coming, they became so excited that they all went running to greet him. And it is explained how affectionate they welcomed Vidura. They gave him a nice sitting place, sweet, loving words. They offered him a place to take his bath, a place to rest. They offered him wonderful, wonderful prasad. And after all of his comforts were completely taken care of, Yudhisthira, with such affection, is inquiring into the welfare of Vidura. And he is, with a very grateful heart, expressing his deep appreciation for everything that Vidura has done for them in his life. And Srila Prabhupada explains that this is such an important part of Vaishnava culture, learning how to welcome and receive guests. In fact, Srila Prabhupada says that in your home, it is your duty to welcome guests with so much affection that they forget whatever sorrows or miseries may be in their heart. In fact, Guru Maharaj explains that according to the Vedic principle, even if your worst enemy comes to your house, you must treat him in such a way that he forgets that he's your enemy. And many examples are given. One is Duryodhana himself. Even though he was so terribly envious, if someone came as a guest to his house, he had to satisfy them. There is a story, Srila Prabhupada explains, how at one time in the battle of Kurukshetra, the Duryodhana, with his sharp words and brilliant intelligence, he insulted Bhishma for not really trying very hard to kill the Pandavas because of his affection. He said, "You call yourself a Kshatriya. A Kshatriya performs his duty and has to put aside all sentimental affections. But you are not fighting very well against the Pandavas. You could kill them if you want. You are transgressing the real principles of the hero you're supposed to be." So he actually made Bhishma very angry when he was saying like this. And Bhishma said, "All right, tomorrow I will kill the 5 Pandavas. And I have these 5 arrows, one for each of them." So Duryodhana said, "Let me keep those arrows till tomorrow." So at night, they wouldn't fight. That was the rule. Later on they did. But Krishna knew that Bhishma had given these 5 arrows to Duryodhana. So he said, "You know, Bhishma has already given his word that these 5 arrows will kill you. So somehow or other we have to get those arrows from Duryodhana." Now Duryodhana knew that his life depended and his victory depended so much on these arrows. So Krishna took the Pandavas and they went to Duryodhana's tent where he would sleep at night. And Duryodhana, even though they were his worst enemies, when they come to your house, it is the etiquette, you have to give such hospitality that they forget your enemies and you have to offer them whatever makes them happy. So even though Duryodhana was so cruel, still he followed this etiquette. And with very sweet, loving words, he welcomed them, he gave them a sitting place, and he said, "What can I do for you? How can I serve you?" "Ah, you have asked. Give us those 5 arrows." And he had to give, because it's the etiquette that you have to satisfy the desires of a guest that comes to your house. So he gave those 5 arrows. And when Bhishma heard that, he was very much, he understood this was Krishna. We think we can cheat, we think we can do something, but Krishna will always, he will always be supreme. We make so many plans, but ultimately Krishna will cheat us if we are not doing the proper seva. Many beautiful examples. So this is a very important part of Vedic culture. And especially it is a very important part of Vaishnava culture. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he was in the Grihastha ashram, he also illustrated this principle so wonderfully. When they were living together, Lakshmi, Priya, Sachi Devi, They did not have very much wealth, material wealth. They were Brahmins. But one day, 20 sannyasis just came to their home, completely unexpected. No introduction. So Lord Chaitanya, following this principle of Vaishnava etiquette, so carefully, although he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he arranged for his mother and his wife to cook, and they were so busy cooking, and then when Lord Chaitanya, he was giving them sweet words, giving them nice sitting places, just making them feel so nice, And then he personally, with his own hands, he served them to their full satisfaction. And in this way, he treated them so that they were completely satisfied. And it is explained by Srila Vrindavan Das Thakur that practically every day, unexpected guests were coming to the house of Gauranga Mahaprabhu. And every day, he and his wife and mother, their greatest service was simply welcoming such guests and just making them feel so wonderfully happy to be visiting his home, giving them such beautiful Krishna conscious love and affection. This is the very important principle. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, whatever he performed in his life, we should understand is the example that we should also follow. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was sannyasi, living in Jagannath Puri, when the residents of Bengal would come during the Chaturmasya on pilgrimage, we read how he greeted them. How wonderful. It was a festivity of welcoming the devotees, each and every one of them. He would send Govinda and Kashi Mishra first, and as the devotees were coming, they would be at the outskirts of Jagannath Puri, giving them garlands, giving them prasad, giving them nice things, and then they'd come closer, and then he would send Swarup Damodar Goswami and others to greet them and give them nice gifts and welcoming, affectionate words. And ultimately, when they came even closer, Lord Chaitanya himself, he would garland each devotee, he would embrace them, he would put sandalwood pulp on them, because to relieve them of the heat of the long journey. And then he would personally he would arrange comfortable quarters for them to live. He would personally arrange wonderful prasad of Lord Jagannath, just what everyone liked the best, he would arrange for them. Sumptuously, he would arrange for someone to take them to take bath in the sea. He would personally take them to the temple to see the beautiful form of Lord Jagannath. In this way, as a grihasta, as a sannyasi, he taught us the most essential virtue of Vaishnava behavior in the mood of welcoming in such loving way the devotees when they come to your home. Even Ramchandra Puri, who was so critical, envious, and blasphemous of Lord Chaitanya, still, when he would come to Lord Chaitanya's home, even to criticize him, Lord Chaitanya would bow down and give him a nice sitting place and offer him whatever comforts he had. So, if we actually want to really receive the special mercy of the Lord, we have to take these principles very seriously. In fact, in the fifth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, from the opposite point of view, it describes that there is a particular hellish planet where you are tortured for endless periods of time, at least it feels like that, for one who does not treat a guest that comes to his home with honor and respect. Not only, it says, an unexpected guest. For those who do not lovingly receive unexpected guests in their home with such etiquette, they have to suffer terribly in a hellish planet. And if you want the details, you can read fifth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. So this is a very important principle. And actually in our temple, Sri Radha Gopinath temple, we should try to adopt this spirit. We should know that this is Radha Rani and Sri Gopinath's home. This is the home of Lord Nityananda Prabhu, Sri Gauranga Mahaprabhu. Srila Prabhupada is the caretaker. He's teaching us how to take care of their home. We have been quoting Srila Prabhupada's instructions. So anyone who comes through these doors of this temple, we should know they are special guests coming to visit the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and it is expected of us to give them such hospitality without discrimination of what their material status in society may be. They should be given affectionate, loving words. They should be giving, they should feel wonderful. Srila Prabhupada explains, this principle is so important. When a guest comes to the house of a king, he gives them royal treatment. But even if you're very poor, if you give that person a little straw mat, a little water, and affectionate words, you will completely satisfy him or her. So this must be established. When people come, they should be welcomed with affectionate words. They should be given a nice explanation of the deities. They should be given some nice Krishna prasad. They should feel by the loving behavior of the devotees toward them that they have entered into Vaikuntha, the spiritual world. So we should try to establish this principle as far as possible. And not only for guests, but even for devotees, the residents who live here, even congregational devotees, when they come, they are also like guests. We should feel like that. We should try to welcome them with great affection, make them feel very happy and comfortable, give them the love of the Vaishnavas. And this type of exchange will bring about the real presence of Krishna. Because Krishna is revealed through the loving exchanges of devotees. Through this process, he is pleased to make his presence known to the world. So in his affectionate words to Vidura, Yudhisthira Maharaj, although he's a great king, Duryodhana saw him as the son of a Sudrani. But Yudhisthira is seeing him as a worshipable, saintly person. He was not thinking, I am king, you are something, less birth, less caste. He was seeing Vidura not by material designations, but he was seeing him by his spiritual qualification. And he's expressing such gratitude. Such gratitude. And he's wondering, he's concerned not only with the spiritual substance of his great yatra, but he's also concerned with his physical well-being also. He's asking two questions. While traveling the surface of the earth, how did you maintain your livelihood? He's wondering. Srila Prabhupada is explaining. He's asking, where did you eat? What did you eat? Did you go to the charitable kitchens at these holy places? In other words, the body of a Vaishnav is not simply to be considered something material, because a devotee who is utilizing his body in Krishna's service, that body is very important. In fact, it's the most important thing to the world, because it's through the body of such a Vaishnav that he goes from place to place, that he speaks transcendental knowledge, that he gives proper example. And this is actually how Krishna reveals himself to the world. through the endeavors of his devotees. Srila Prabhupada's body appeared very sickly, but still, it was that body that took the message of Krishna to every continent in the world. It was that body, through that mouth, that gave the vani of his wonderful, wonderful books to the world. So therefore, devotees were very much attentive to try to take nice care of that facility which was so mercifully revealing Krishna to the world. So he is asking how he maintained his livelihood, how did he eat? And then he asks, at which holy sites and pilgrimage sites did you render service? Yudhisthira Maharaj, although he was a wonderful host, he kept his loving dealings with his guest completely on the spiritual platform. This is also very important. When we give someone nice comforts, nice prasad, when we give someone nice welcoming words, ultimately our purpose should be to either give Krishna consciousness or receive Krishna consciousness, to share Krishna consciousness. Is there any questions?
Raja, talking about the Vidura, we used to have the same problem. We have the problem that when we come into spiritual life, we don't come because we have a natural inclination of coming into spiritual life. We had got some, so to say, setback in our material life by some insult or by some abusement or something or the other. And when we got such a setback in our material life, then we come running to our spiritual life. Most of our cases used to be on that basis. And then we concentrate our life into spiritual life. Then after some time, we do something or the other in the spiritual life. But when that thought about that abusement or that insult or all those things that has happened in our past, when we think on it, that anger again comes up in our life. We feel, oh, this fellow has done something wrong with me. And when we talk about Vidura, he had such a high compassionate attitude that he forgave everything. But that thing doesn't come up in our life. We feel it that, no, I don't want to have the same distance with him. I don't want, because he had done so much bad for me. Now that thing, when we feel it, then we feel that we have not done anything in our spiritual life. That thing is not going from our heart. So what is exactly wrong in us? That why this thing is there in our heart and how to overcome that?
Through purification. Your behavior is proper when you take to Krishna consciousness. However, the inclinations of your many lifetimes of conditioning still remain within your heart. Gradually, through proper behavior, through the process of devotional service, based on hearing and chanting the names and glories of the Lord, these unwanted impressions are cleansed or purified from our heart. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has prayed, Chaito Dharapana Marajanam Bhava Mahadavagmi Nirvapanam. Through this following of the principles of the Sankirtan movement, gradually all of these unwanted desires are cleansed from our heart. It is a gradual process. In the meanwhile, as we are cleansing, when these unwanted propensities surface within our consciousness, we must very, very carefully control those tendencies so we do not further incriminate ourselves with putting more conditioned contaminations within us. We follow the four regulative principles. We learn how to humbly serve the devotees and respect all living beings. And we chant Hare Krishna. And in this way, we cleanse, we do not put any more dirt in,
And gradually we become purified. And only at that time are these urges dissipated. But that takes time. Srila Prabhupada said it is a gradual process. For millions of births you have been accumulating dirt in your heart. But by the power of the holy name and the blessings of the Vaishnavas, within this life you can completely clean your heart if you take it very seriously.
Talking about material relationships, usually we come across three aspects where people don't consider it as selfish. They think it is a selfless relationship, like lovers who are willing to take their own lives. Like there are in a country like India, there are Heer Ranjas and Laila Majnu, they say. Their love was so true that they committed suicide. Like, and the other thing is people who have given up their life for this country. They say even this is selfless love. Then again, another thing is a mother and a son's relationship. So that this relationship, how can you say that this is selfish, this is selfless? So how do we preach when you come across these three aspects of relationship?
On the material level, relatively, there are activities that appear very selfless. To die for the country, to die for your children, to be willing to do anything. But it is based on a misconception. Because we are not this material body. This temporary material body has been born in India or America. And therefore we are thinking that this is my country. According to Bhagavad Gita or Srimad Bhagavatam, Janasya Mohogam Mameti. There are two conceptions of illusion and selfishness. One is I and the other is mine. On one level, we are willing to, selfish life means to dedicate to our self-interest of I. I who am this body, this mind, I will do whatever is required to give it pleasure, to protect it, to serve it. That is selfish, is it not? But the conception of mine is also a material illusion. This is my country. This is my family. And why we are risking our life for it? Because it is mine. Huh? Why the Indians don't risk their life for Hong Kong or New Zealand? Huh? Or Sweden? Because those countries are just as much God's property as India. But because this is mine, in relationship to this body, it is mine. Therefore, I will risk my life for it. So that is an extended form of selfishness. Selflessness has to be based on real truth. That we don't see a person according to give a person Krishna consciousness, to help spread Krishna consciousness. That is, and to be willing to take great risks and put yourself through even inconveniences for that purpose is the highest, purest form of selflessness, because it is based on truth. You're not simply selflessly perpetuating an illusion in the lives of others, but you are selflessly trying to do real good for that person, real welfare. Because the problems of this world, according to Gita, are birth, old age, disease, and death. And the only solution to that is not through nationalism. It is only through Krishna consciousness, to gradually help a person liberate himself from the cycle of birth and death. So Srila Prabhupada uses the word, when we are trying to serve the purpose of I, that is concentrated selfishness. When we are trying to serve the purposes of mine, that is extended selfishness. Even philanthropy is extended selfishness. Only when we come to the transcendental platform of dealing with the soul and making sacrifice for the pleasure of God is real selflessness. Do you understand? A mother will do anything for the child. That is one of the purest forms of selfless love in this world. But why she will not do that for your neighbor's child? Because this child is mine. It's an extension of myself. So it is extended selfishness. Correct? We're willing to give our life for the nation because it's an extension of me. It's mine. Selfishness.
Lovers, they want to destroy their body, the source of sense enjoyment, the body itself. They're willing to destroy that because their love, some relationship is not fulfilled, so they're willing to destroy their bodies, which itself is a source of sense enjoyment. So how do they do that?
What?
Like, we have great lovers in the history who have given up their lives, like they have destroyed their body, and that body is the source of ultimate enjoyment. So how do they develop that desire to destroy that body?
Because they are under the modes of material nature. They may be more concerned with another person's body than his own body. Huh? Just like sometimes someone tries to assassinate the king or the president and somebody jumps in front of him to catch the bullet in his own body. That means he's more concerned with the body of that other than himself, because of the value of that person's life is so much more than his own. But it's still, on a material level, that's a very selfless activity. But actually it's still selfish, because he's still concerned what this person's body will do for my selfish purposes is more than what my body can do. So let me risk my life for him. But it is still based on illusion. So yes, people are willing to give their lives to make sacrifices within this illusion of material nature. Any soldier that goes to war, he has to have such a feeling of patriotism for his country and such a conviction that this country is my place and these are my people and I should be willing to die for them. And most soldiers do die for them when they go to war. But from the point of view of spiritual understanding and truth, they have died in vain. They have simply given their lives in devotion to a material misconception. Therefore, when Srila Prabhupada met Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur and was presenting nationalistic arguments, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta completely dismissed it as useless. He said, this party, that party, it will always change. The only real need in this world is Krishna consciousness. We should be willing to give our lives to help people become Krishna conscious. That is real selfless behavior. Yes?
After Mahaprabhu had taken sannyas, he told Shachimata that this is your body, this was meant to serve you, but now I am serving Krishna. So, also devotees, sometimes we see two extremes. One kind of devotees, they tell their parents that, I mean, they have this idea in their minds that my parents are just material parents, they have no connection with my body, with my real self. So, like one devotee told his mother that, in this life, you are my mother, but next life, I may be your mother. So, that time this was condemned, that this is, they will just think we are demoniac people. And other extreme is, we feel so much indebted towards our parents. So, what is the real understanding of, what is our real duty towards our material parents?
Your duty to them is to try to help them become Krishna conscious. Because on any level, if someone helps you, you should always feel a sense of gratitude. We should respect all living beings. Mahaprabhu has told us, amani namani dena, you should offer all respect to others. Just because a person is not a devotee, it does not mean we should not respect them. We should respect them. We should respect every living being. And they have given us factually this body that we are now using for this, for the ultimate goal of life, for Krishna consciousness. If we do not use it for Krishna consciousness due to their influence, then we are cheating them, cheating ourselves, and cheating the world. If we use it for Krishna consciousness, that is actually the ultimate fulfillment, whether they know it or not, of their being parents. They have brought a body to this world that is being utilized for devotional service. So therefore we should respect them, we should honor them, and by this respecting and honoring them, they will naturally, gradually respect and honor us for what we are doing, and then they become Krishna conscious. If you disrespect them, they will disrespect what you stand for, Krishna consciousness. If you respect them, gradually they will respect what you're doing, and therefore that is the best thing for them. So to one extreme, if we give up our Krishna consciousness to respect what they want, then we cheat them, we cheat ourselves, we cheat the world. On the other extreme, if we disrespect them just because they're not surrendered souls, then we are cheating them also. We are cheating them from any inclination they'll ever have to appreciate Krishna consciousness. So therefore we should be fixed in doing what is right. We should not be swayed from the path due to our emotions or sentiments and their various pressures, but at the same time we should offer them all respect and honor and try to, in this way, if you respect them for what they are, they will gradually respect you for what you are, and through this process you can make them devotees. That is the spirit of compassion. Yes? Does that answer your question?
What to do if the parents are somewhat sahajya, to be very much frank? Because what happens is they will not appreciate our activities. And it's very difficult even to make them Krishna conscious on our way. And they cry to criticize because they don't know what we do it. So how to make them realize that what we are doing is perfect, at the same time appreciate us also. And because they being Sahajya, we can't appreciate them because we feel it that we might be becoming them if we try to associate more and more with them. So how to see that they appreciate us?
You cannot be attached to the results of your activities. You can only perform your service properly. If they are sahajyas, obviously you should not associate with their sahajya activities. But still, because they are your parents, you can still respect them as parents. You don't have to respect the wrong things that they are doing, but you can respect them as people, part and parcel of Krishna. Who have this relationship with you. And that's, you have to just go on with the proper path of bhakti in your own life and not be influenced or disturbed by these other ideas, but still give them honor and respect. You don't do what they say, but you honor and respect them as people, as mother and father, as part and parcel of Krishna. And then you have to leave the rest to Krishna. Hiranyakashipu was not a sahajya, he was an asura. That's worse than a sahajya. So much. Sahajyas are still devotees. They're just doing things incorrectly. Hiranyakashipu was such a terrible demon. And follow the footsteps of Prahlad. He never allowed any of his father's pressures, sentiments, or anything to deviate him from the path of pure bhakti for one second of his life. But at the same time, he still was so respectful to his father. He would show him honor, but he never did a thing he said. He disobeyed everything his father wanted of him with respect, with dignity, with compassion. What was the result? His father never listened to a word he said. In his life, his father was never the slightest bit influenced by his preaching or by his behavior, except the more Prahlad exhibited devotional qualities, the more his father hated him and tried to destroy him. But because of Prahlad's affectionate, respectful dealings with his father was ultimately liberated. And because Prahlad never deviated from the path despite all influences, his father was liberated. So whatever our parents, whether they be sahajas, or whether they be asuras, or whether they be karma mishra bhaktas, or jnana mishra bhaktas, or whether they just be atheists or materialists, if we become pure in our devotional service, they will get great benefits. And if we offer respect to them, then we are giving them the best possible opportunity to appreciate the activities of Krishna consciousness. Nanda Gargamuni, their mother was a very materialistic lady. And she only had two sons. And they both joined the Hare Krishna movement. And she was a widow. She had no husband. And she was depending on these two children to support her, maintain her throughout her life. But they both became devotees, brahmacharis. So she came to Srila Prabhupada and she was very much upset, very much crying. And what did Prabhupada tell them? Prabhupada told them that you should continue your Krishna consciousness and not be influenced by any of this material energy trying to call you away from Krishna. But at the same time, you must offer all respect. So when they came to Srila Prabhupada, when she came to Srila Prabhupada, he said to her, I did not tell them to be brahmacharis. They want to be brahmacharis. So you will benefit the most if they're brahmacharis. And then he told Brahmananda and Gargamuni, it was initiation. They were actually getting initiated. And she came to the initiation. She was crying. She was so losing her sons. Prabhupada told Brahmananda and Gargamuni that you should touch her feet. In America, nobody does like this. In India, it's kind of a custom. But no one ever has respected anyone like this by touching their feet in the West. So on Prabhupada's order, very respectfully, they touched her feet. And her heart melted. She had never received such respect from her sons. And even though they were not in any way being persuaded to come back to material life, because she received such respect from her sons on that level, she actually became very favorable and very proud that her children were devotees. So our Guru Maharaj trained us like this. I remember I was at New Vrindavan. There was a devotee named Kula Shekhar. He was the first devotee ever to join in England. He was the first British devotee. When Malati, Shyam Sundar, Mukunda, Janaki, Gurudas, and Jamuna went to England, he was the first person to join the movement as a brahmachari, Kula Shekhar. And when Prabhupada went to England, what was it, 1969? Kula Shekhar was a brahmachari, and his father met Srila Prabhupada. He was trying to get his son back, and Srila Prabhupada was just very nice to him. And he told Kula Shekhar also to be very nice to him. So years later, this was about 76, about 7 years later, in New Vrindavan, Srila Prabhupada, I was in the room with Srila Prabhupada, and Kula Shekhar was there. He was living there. And Srila Prabhupada asked him, how is your father? He met him 7 years before. He said, how is your father? And Kula Shekhar was just telling Srila Prabhupada that my father, he's just in Maya. He's an atheist. He doesn't believe in God. He's this and that. He was saying all bad things about him. And Srila Prabhupada said, no, he's a very nice man. I like him very much. You should also respect him. Like that. Because he showed some appreciation for Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada saw that and remembered it 7 years later. He showed some respect to Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada never forgot that. He considered it something very good. And he wanted Kula Shekhar to recognize that he showed some appreciation and respect for our movement, so you must honor and respect him. Whether they reciprocate properly or not is beyond our control. We should respect all living beings. Hare Krishna.